May I speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Amen. Historical anthropologists tell us that the parable of the talents would have had a very different meaning in the time of Jesus than it has for us listening in the 21st century. You see, because in the ancient world, the economic pie was only so big and it was fixed in size, so that if somebody increased their size, their slice of the pie, they could only do so at the expense of someone else whose slice would decrease. And so in the time of Jesus, wealth creation, wealth generation was heavily frowned on, because if you increased your wealth, it was a sure indicator that you were doing so at someone else's expense. The rich enrich themselves at the expense of the poor. A story as old as time. And maybe this gives us a different slant on Jesus' words this morning: to those who have, even more will be given, but to those who have not, even what they have will be taken away. Listening from our perspective in the 21st century, we hear this parable with completely different ears. We live in a society where the size of the economic pie increases and decreases in proportion to the processes of investment and entrepreneurship. For us, it's possible to increase the size of our slice without necessarily decreasing the slice of another's. And so we hear this parable with ears that affirm for us our economic culture. For us, investment, generation of profits, is a very acceptable activity. In fact, the values of venture capitalism make that behavior highly desirable. And we are well aware that the prosperity of our society waxes and wanes according to the patterns of the stock market. Now, it's very important for us to ask the question, given the world that Jesus lived in, what on earth could he possibly be meaning by telling this parable? Because we can't just assume that Jesus was meaning what we are hearing. Now, we all have a cultural bias, and my cultural bias is, as a New Zealander who from the age of 22 lived all of his adult life in the United Kingdom, my cultural bias is formed by societies that have traditionally seen government as an effective agent for the redistribution of economic prosperity in society. Having come from those cultures, I am also acutely aware of the experience of how unsuccessful that process often is. And it leads us all to speculate on whether government is the most effective instrument for social redistribution of wealth. And this is a question that has very serious spiritual as well as economic and political ramifications. Christian teaching on the ethics of work and the marketplace is led really by the social teaching of the Roman Catholic Church. It's a pity that most of us don't know about that social teaching, because the church's preoccupation with sexuality drowns out this teaching and grabs all the highlight. But Christian social teaching understands that wealth generation has two parts to it. We need entrepreneurs who take risk with investment. We also need people to participate in the production process. We need entrepreneurs and we need workers. And a Christian vision of society is that the contribution of the workers is part of the generation of the profits. And that it's not just about the dignity of work being respected, but it's also about how do we find our way as a society towards the development of more successful mechanisms that ensure that the increase in economic prosperity is well distributed across all the groups of our society. It's a great idea for many who are engaged in the worker process to look for the possibility of sharing in the profits. However, this is also a mixed message, because as the investment specialists will tell us, profits go up and profits go down. And so if workers are to share in the distribution of profit, are workers also to share in the management of the risk? Now, this parable of Jesus, for me, is deeply provocative. It is comforting. It is disturbing. From my 21st century perspective, it appears to validate the emphasis of our capitalist society, our economic culture. Yet Jesus didn't live in that world. He stands in the tradition of the Hebrew prophets, whose repetitive message is decrying the way the powerful exploit the powerless. And the Christian church, for its early life, up until the Renaissance really, with the invention of modern banking, forbade Christians to lend at interest. And that explains the important role that the Jews played in the medieval banking system, because Jews could lend at interest. And so the system that we see a glimpse of in the parable this morning of the rich man assigning to his stewards the task of taking care of his increase in wealth was a pattern that governed our life as Christian communities probably up until the 14th and 15th century. Now, this parable comes to us on the day when we are in gathering. Today's a very interesting day because it's our in gathering Sunday, as well as our installation Sunday, as well as continuing to commemorate our patron, St. Martin, whose festival it was on the 11th of November. And so today we come to the end of our month-long process of annual renewal. And on the 15th of October, you will remember that I said to you, while there is a practical connection between our annual renewal and next year's budget, there is no spiritual connection between the two at all. The annual renewal process is not about how much we give. The annual renewal process calls us to conduct an inventory on our attitudes to giving. The extent of our gratitude, expressed monetarily, is an important element of celebration. The celebration of our gratitude to God, which is expressed through our desire to live more generously. And as we come to the end of this period where we have been exploring our attitudes to giving, the important connection for us to remember is that our giving is not about the budget. I predict we'll come to 2015 and we will be facing a deficit, and there will be some hard talk about money. That will happen then. This is not the time. The emphasis as we come to the end of our annual renewal is that our giving emerges from our gratitude. And it feeds our generosity so that our pledge is fruitful for us spiritually. That's the connection. And when viewed from this deeper and richer perspective, the parable of the talents is not about wise financial investment. It's about the investment of ourselves in the greater life of our community as a fruitful expression of our thankfulness to God. It is only when our giving flows generously from our encounter with the sources of our gratitude that it is capable of being for us the experience of fruitfulness for which we all so long. At the end of the parable, Jesus says these words: "For to all who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away." Perplexing, troubling words. But if this is a comment not about financial investment, but about the investment of ourselves, then perhaps it makes better sense. Are we going to be like the two stewards who risked with skill the increase of that which they were entrusted with? Our talents, our skills, our gifts, our passions, ourselves. This is what God has entrusted us with. Or are we going to be like the other steward and we bury ourselves in the earth? We hide ourselves. And we play it safe. We stay risk-averse within a small world of predictability. Or are we going to dig up our talents, our investments, and make them available not only for our own experience of fruitfulness, but for the fruiting of the community in which we play a vital part? investment is always a risky business. And spiritually, risk equals courage. Are we going to have the courage to risk ourselves in furtherance of the deepest desire of our hearts, which is to make a difference and to be part of a community that is seen to be making a difference in the world? And so we need courage to trust enough to move beyond the safe and the sure, so to embrace generosity as an adequate return for our life's investment. Amen.